It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, and I'm actually playing Bus Stop, not the air that I suck. Sorry, Nikki, I didn't, I wasn't able to load that one up.
The air that I suck. What? That's a foul thought, Phil.
Why don't you give a guy a break?
You know something, once again, I'm not talking.
Hold on. Yeah, I just was fooling around, Margaret. I didn't mean to butcher up your favorite song. It's also Nikki's, The Air That I Breathe, which I was trying to get on the air and I couldn't, but I'm on the air. And I'm breathing this air. It ain't bad. Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. And tune in. We would like for you to sample all three if you wouldn't mind. Okay. We started a new podcast today called Observations. In the Observation podcast, I go off on the Danish zoo where they butchered up a giraffe. And you heard us talking about... And yes, I said butchered up because they cut this thing up in front of a bunch of kids.
Well, that's the part that... See, I can handle anything, but that part right there, Katie barred the door.
Well, that was the part that got me pissed off.
What are you talking about, kid?
They took this giraffe, a 2-year-old giraffe named Marius, and Ricky Gervais, who it would appear Ricky Gervais, the very funny man and producer and actor from Great Britain, who's here in the United States now, because everybody's been stealing his ideas over here, so he thought he'd just come on over and keep closer tabs on his career.
That's not called for, Phil. Ricky Gervais has been paid handsomely for his ideas.
Oh, well, I got that. There's no question. But fact of the matter is, folks, nobody's had any ideas except for Ricky. And so he said, well, I'll come over and I'll be closer when you guys want to buy them from me. So anyway, I saw his tweets. He's had some pretty funny ones with regard to animals. You think he's a...
Yeah, I think he's an animal, right? Guy and everything.
I'm not familiar with it. What is this man? Ricky who?
Ricky Gervais. He's a comic actor and producer. But anyway, he said he had the most poignant photograph of this beautiful... giraffes are kind of dreamy-looking, beautiful animals up close, aren't they?
Well, they have those long eyebrows... Not eyebrows.
They got eyelashes and everything.
Yes, eyelashes. They have the long, dreamy-looking eyelashes.
No, that's the cartoon one.
No, it's... What do you mean it's the cartoon one?
I think Robert's right. I think cartoon giraffes have eyelashes.
Cartoon giraffes have eyelashes?
Well, that's my understanding, yes.
Well, I don't... No. I think real giraffes have real long eyelashes, don't they?
Long are the female ones.
Not the female... Are you kidding me or something?
Well, what are you guys talking about? Because...
I'm telling you that giraffes have the long... dreamy-looking eyelashes, unless I'm mistaken.
Well, the thing to do would be to get a photograph. Do you have one of this giraffe before it was cut down with the single bullet to the head? And
will you knock it off, General, please?
I'm terribly sorry.
That's very traumatic for me and a lot of people.
You getting all emotional about a giraffe?
Yeah, looks like he's getting emotional about a giraffe.
Giraffe, you moron. What, did you do that on purpose?
No, he doesn't do that on purpose. That idiot doesn't know how to pronounce giraffe.
Well, no, it said that you get to do French.
I get to do what?
You talk about the French.
I talk, what is he saying?
Margaret, you pronounce things in the French version, right?
Well, it's not giraffe, you clod, you dirt clod with legs.
All right, look.
That's hitting below the belt right there.
All right, now, I don't know whether giraffes have eyelashes, whether they look dreamy. I don't know any of that, but there was a close-up picture of this one, and it was very, it was a beautiful animal, and the guy is, this poor little giraffe is gone. A lot of people were pissed off. Now, I did see the inevitable, and I think that this is to be expected. Every time there is a large reaction about something, here comes the response, and the response was, you people don't know. The response came from the supporters of the Copenhagen Zoo. So now there's like 1,900 Facebook groups. There's the Copenhagen Zoo. There's Support the Copenhagen Zoo. There's Boycott the Copenhagen Zoo. There's Never Visit the Copenhagen Zoo Again As Long As You Live.
What is Copenhagen?
That's the name of the town, ma'am.
That's the city in Denmark.
Oh, okay. You're going Copenhagen.
No, it's Copenhagen. Copenhagen. Or if you will, the Copenhagen. And no, that's not the French. That's the original Germanica, the Saxon pronunciation.
What did it say it again?
Copenhagen.
Copenhagen.
Phil, don't twist your nose up like you just smelled a...
Yeah, you like you smelled a fart or something.
I'm sorry, Margaret. I'm sorry.
Well, that's what you do. I said Copenhagen, and then you go, ooh, like there's something that is sulfuric and...
All right, I apologize. I've never heard it pronounced that way, but I defer to your erudition on that.
Don't use too many big words because Mumbles over there starts to get a headache.
What are you talking about, me being Mumble? You're the one saying Copenhagen.
Oh, baby.
Hey, watch it. Boy, when you're pulling that fist back, Margaret, I think you're really going to throw it.
That I've never struck that slot.
All right, take it easy, and let's just...
There you go, take it easy again.
Let's just talk about this for a minute. Now, the Copenhagen Zoo had its supporters, or it was the beneficiary, I should say, of its supporters over the last 24 to 48 hours coming out in favor of the zoo and saying, well, now, everybody's an expert on giraffes. And... imagine people telling the Copenhagen Zoo how to deal with giraffes. You see, this is the automatic response, even from people as undereducated about these matters as those of us who didn't want to see the giraffe die. So there's a whole bunch of people who are not zoologists, not animal behaviorists, do not work in biology. We just didn't want to see the giraffe die. And then there's a whole bunch of people who are big fans of the zoo, probably go there every day, eat the popcorn, eat the peanuts, sit on their dead ass and look at the gorillas swinging back and forth. And they support the Copenhagen Zoo and are about as dumb as we are. But here you have on both sides of the issue the overwhelming mass of people who are not the most educated. And then closer to the issue are the educated ones, the ones who support the zoo, the ones that don't.
Well, what do the educated ones that support the zoo say?
This is the point that I'm trying to make. The educated ones that support the zoo make the typical argument that zoos make. And it is the following argument. Since the animal is in captivity anyway... it has these limitations. It at the age at a certain age of maturity, it can't be around other males. It'll fight, and it can't. You know, this is the time when in the wild, it's very difficult for it to survive. And this is a time here at the zoo that it will be very difficult for it to survive because it has all these different needs, and it may be exposed to diseases. So, in other words, what they're saying is, if we'd left it in the wild, then it probably would have survived adapting as it would to its natural surroundings. However, when you say that to them, they say, oh, but you don't understand, Mr. Hendry. Why, it isn't in the wild. It was born in captivity. Perhaps it was. Perhaps it was. I don't know. You see an animal like this that's born in captivity, why, then it grows to a certain age, and we got to put a bullet in its head. Oh, I see. All right. So in other words, let me just get this straight, because you're so wise and educated, and you got all these clowns fooled because you're the Copenhagen Zoo, so you know what the hell you're doing, right? So what you do is you get a giraffe, you have the giraffe give birth to another giraffe. That giraffe, born in captivity, now suits your purposes. Now you got a perfectly fine giraffe. You raise it up. All the little kids come. They take a look at it. The people come. They eat the popcorn. They see a giraffe. Look at that giraffe. Isn't that a fantastic giraffe? And now that the giraffe has reached a certain age, it served its purpose. That is to attract people to your scumbag zoo so that everyone will sit and look at the giraffe. The giraffe is now not needed any longer. It's surplus. It's, we'll get another giraffe. We'll have another giraffe born in captivity. You put a bullet in its head or whatever the hell you do, and then you turn it into a teaching moment. You autopsy the thing in front of children. You carve it up into steaks, and you feed it to lions. And this completes the sadistic and cynical cycle that the Copenhagen Zoo would have me believe is a marvelous, beneficial, and just wonderful example of how we work with wildlife and coexist with wildlife.
Everything you did there is great, but then you went coexist.
Yeah, you did, Miss Henry.
Are you guys kidding? Because I'm going to hurt somebody.
Hey, Margaret. Okay. Take it easy. What are you guys doing, huh?
What do you mean? You just said take it easy.
What do you mean I lisp? So I lisp. Did you hear what I was saying?
Yeah, Miss Henry, but we're trying to produce.
You knuckleheads don't need to produce. You need to listen to what he's saying and understand the overall effect of it. I'd like to reach across, and I'd like to cuff both of you across.
I just...
Better go get some water.
I don't need any water.
Yes, you do, because your voice just cracked. Forget about whether I lisped.
Well, you did. You said that, man. Call it this.
Okay, so I said coexist, and that's the way I'm going to say coexist from now on. I'm going to lisp it, and I'm going to piss you guys off doing it. How does that feel?
Dad, look, you know, bent out of shape, everything.
Why do I think there's a call from David G. Hall in my future? I don't know. World-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and online, of course, at TuneIn. We're going to be right back here with more on this and other issues, including some NAACP controversy. I don't even know if I want to get into that, man. I'm getting so sick of that. Every time I see Fox having anything to do with a headline, and it ain't that I, you know, got anything really against conservatives. Anytime I see CNN having anything to do with a headline, but these days it's... Anyway, these days I see more of Fox than I do see of CNN. Maybe it's because I watch them all the time. Maybe that's it. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Well, then why don't you stop watching them?
Yep. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. Yeah.
Oh, that's a real rock and roller, isn't it?
It's a nice song. It's... The world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And we're talking here about, we're talking here about the giraffe with the eyelashes. I don't know what the hell we're talking about, man. You know, you guys really screwed me up with that one.
We have to figure out they got eyelashes.
Who cares if a giraffe... I'm getting very personally perturbed on behalf of Mr. Henry, who's been trying to tell us about a giraffe in the zoo that someone walked in, put a bullet in, got back into a, I don't know what it did. They got back into a car. What was it?
No, they didn't get back into a car. The giraffe was killed by the zoo.
All right, that's what. And you guys are talking about some dreamy looking giraffe.
Not dreamy looking. We were wondering if giraffes have eyelashes.
All right, I don't care, and I'm not going to look into it right this instant. We're just talking about the giraffe and the fact that the poor animal was shot. Now, last night, of course, we had Dean Wheeler on the show, who was preoccupied with discussions of squirrels that live in trees behind his house. The discussion veered, and when I say veered, I mean that in the exact sense of an automobile going off of a road and careening, let's say, into a gas station, and the whole thing blows up. Because I have to tell you, Mr. Wheeler's conversation with us got that scary. We're talking to him about giraffes, and he began talking to us about a squirrel or two or three, I think.
He said there were three.
Three distinct squirrels that lived in a tree out behind his house, and that's what he was doing battle with. As much of an animal lover as he and his wife Emeralda are, or were, he and Emeralda are, as much as animal lovers they are, he was looking forward to the day that he could chop down the old-growth oak tree in his backyard and watch these squirrels plummet to their death on the rocky surface below. His words, not mine. Dr. Jim Sadler is going to join us here, and we're going to talk a little bit with Dr. Sadler about the love of animals and, shall we say, Dr. Sadler, the almost extreme or inordinate love that some people have for animals. In this case, my outrage and the outrage of so many millions of people around the globe over the death of this giraffe cannot possibly be misplaced, can it?
No, I don't think it's misplaced, Phil. I think when we talk about people that have a love of animals, we're talking really about an inordinate love of animals, I should say. We're talking really about people that substitute animals in their lives for normal human relations. This is a very common thing among people who have had unsuccessful relations with people, or have been unsuccessful, for instance, in the case of a lot of women, at having their own children. There are many couples that substitute animals for the lack of children in their lives. There are some people that substitute animals for friends, and they're more comfortable relating to animals than people.
So you're saying literally that some people are relating to animals in place of human beings.
What about if they have sex with one?
Excuse me, please.
So, well, so... that threw me a little bit because you weren't just talking to my wife, were you, young man? Because we just had the conversation.
What do you mean by wife?
Bud, would you shut up?
Well, no, I'll tell him. My wife was asking me about a program that I'd been on. It was an early one of these early morning public affairs shows where someone made a joke. They had a carton of eggs, and these were the eggs from a chicken coop that this guy had on the farm. It was one of these 4-H shows where we talk about, how the dairy farms are doing and everything like that.
You were a guest on the show?
Yeah, I was a guest on this program as an educator representing one of the universities, the University of California, Northridge, and talking as a student advisor in our psychology department.
What were you doing on a farm show?
Well, it was actually a public affairs show, and I was only there to consult on this guy who kept referring to the chicken and to the eggs as his family, his family, his family. And I wanted to get a little bit more into that, and my wife called me during the commercial break on my cell phone, and she said, maybe those are his firstborn, and that's his wife, ha, ha, ha. Which I thought was funny, but it turned out she wanted me to ask. I'm embarrassed to talk about this, fella.
Well, you know, this is a little bit off of the point. You really want to get into this?
No, I don't care, but he said, what about sex? And so this comes hot on the heels of being on this show with this guy with his chicken and these eggs.
Well, all right, so there was a guy with chicken and eggs, and what happened?
And what came first, the chicken or the egg? You know that joke?
Yeah, I know that joke, General.
Thank you very much, sir.
Well, if I overspoke...
No, you just never mind. We don't need that right now. So go ahead, Doctor.
Well, I'm just saying that the chicken and the eggs and this guy saying, those are my firstborn and this is my wife, ha, 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 got me to thinking about whether this guy's not telling the truth, but, you know... So when he said something about sex, it really started. My mind started to go places.
All right. Well, why don't we just pull your mind back out of that?
I'd appreciate that.
And let's talk about the giraffe. And Bud, you can keep your mouth shut. Why'd you even bring that up?
He was talking about psychology and way people talk.
Let Phil ask the questions, because when you ask a question, Bud, my stomach begins to turn a little bit. All right. My stomach starts to turn.
Just. Allow us, Bud. Doctor?
All right. So you're talking about the giraffe.
Actually, I was talking about Dean Wheeler and the squirrels, you know, because he is a guy who is a big animal fan. He's an environmentalist. He does believe in the... He did not believe that the giraffe should have been killed, and as I didn't, as a lot of people didn't, but there he was ready to saw down this oak tree.
All right, well, the reason why he wanted to saw the oak tree down was he needed relief from this harassment that he was getting. The harassment he's getting from a squirrel is obviously something that is going to be nerve-wracking. I don't think it's worth the death of an old-growth oak tree that's 300 years old. I think there are more mature ways of dealing with a squirrel that's going to behave that way. I assume that he got tried to get some exterminators.
Oh, yeah, he brought out exterminators. He brought out pest control. None of this seemed to work. As a matter of fact, in one instance, he had one of these guys got up into the tree, I think, to try to go after one of the squirrels and fell off of one of the branches and injured himself quite severely and blamed the squirrels themselves, which I don't know.
Well, I'm sure he was talking more about how the having to go up the tree.
This guy's talking about the squirrel pushed him, which I cannot imagine.
No, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Well, then, but I don't know why the guy would even come up with something like that. But the point that I'm trying to make here is there is a psychosis or a psychotic break that seems to have taken place here.
Right, and that will happen. That will happen. Because in my book, No Spy Agreement, which is a book about the hostile as well as beneficial relationships that humans have with animals, the hostile relationships that I look into are these enemy where an animal and a human become enemies, and where the human is often the loser. And I'm not talking about a situation in the wild where a guy might get eaten up by a bear or something like that. I'm talking about even a domestic situation where a semi-wild animal like a squirrel can drive a guy who lives in a house nuts. You know, he drives the guy... You know, not to, it's a joke, you know, it makes him nuts to drive him around the bend. you know, I heard something.
What did you hear?
I heard a young lady say, 1 minute.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. Are you hearing that?
He might have heard Nikki on the feed there.
Yeah, that's, I heard someone say, 1 minute. Is that for me?
No, that's for us. All right.
Dr. Stadler, my question is, you're saying that a man who lives in a civilized domicile like a home is still driven to a psychotic break by a wild animal like a squirrel living in a tree?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
All right.
All right. With that, let's take a quick break here on the Phil Henry Show and be back with Dr. Jim Sadler as we continue to discuss here a very, 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 very sad situation involving the giraffe at the Copenhagen Zoo, people's affinity for wild animals, and how we can all band together and just make this world a much, you know, cooler and neater place Bye. To, you know, live in. That's all I'm saying, you know.
Well, that sounded a little bit sissy.
Back to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, every night live from the El Pacifico here on the West Coast and online at philhenryshow.com. You can hear every single solitary show in its entirety going back over 15 years, and this is some of the most revolutionary, groundbreaking, radical stuff that the world has ever known, that the world has ever seen, that has far surpassed anything else on radio. As a matter of fact, one Phil Henry Show is equal to about 30 of any other guy's radio shows. If you don't believe me, just ask them. Oh!
Well, that is true.
Yes, it is. Now, I'm reaching down and...
Yeah, your hand down.
Don't say it. I'm reaching down to get a news story here because I couldn't believe my eye. I know we have Dr. Jim Sadler. We're going to wrap up with Dr. Sadler on the whole giraffe thing and the fact that guys are flipping their lids on squirrel. I don't know, but once we wrap with him, I do want to get to a story that has everyone just agog and aghast, but for me, it's not... so bad.
Yeah, I want to find out what your problem is with Bob Costas because, you know, I think he is a fine man.
I don't have a problem with Bob Costas, okay?
Well, you've been waiting for him to get bumped off the air for a long time, even if it took pink eye.
Well, I don't know where his hands have been.
Yeah, no kidding. I bet you...
Take it easy, bud, huh? No wonder I'm saying take it easy a lot these days. Dr. Sadler, how are you?
I'm fine. Look, I wanted to marry Bob Costas, you know. He got pink eye because one of the ways that I'm assuming you get pink... I am a doctor, but it's been a long time since I've practiced any kind of pediatrics. It's a long time since I've done that, and I can tell you...
Dr. Sadler, can I interrupt you for a moment?
No, you mean, if you don't mind, Margaret, because I've been on the program before and you butt in.
No, I do not butt in, but you know as well as I do your grammar is atrocious, like what you just did there.
And that's why I didn't want you to butt in. The point, I'm not the most educated person, but I do have my medical degree, and I'm sorry that you're PO'd about that. Okay.
I'm not PO'd about it, as you say. I wonder how you can pass yourself off as an educated man. Never mind.
Yeah, Margaret, let it go, okay? Every time he's on the show...
Exactly, Phil. Every time on the show, she wants to break my castanets about how I don't talk good. Okay, fine. I'm self-educated, but I do have my medical degree, and that is gonna... I know that flips you out.
That doesn't flip me out. I could care less, but as long as you're on the program.
Now I forgot what you. Oh, I know. I wanted to say, Phil, that Bob Costas got pink eye because he didn't wash his hands after going to the toilet, and that's all I want to say about that. So.
All right, fine. Why would you bring that up? I mean, doesn't pink eye something that is...
I brought it up because everyone thinks Bob Costas is so great. But the guy can't even wash his hands after a trip to the toilet.
I thought pink eye was something that was transferred from other people. Children get it quite a bit because of the constant touching and the general physical proximity that children have to each other and how they're not the most hygiene when they are playing, etc. It's easy for a kid's fingers to go someplace and then get onto another kid. You know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, but I think, are you saying that a kid See, what I want to say here...
Dr. Sandler, I understand you don't want to say a kid go to the toilet.
Well, yeah, what I wanted to say, I don't know what he said.
But, yeah, Bud, please don't interrupt anymore.
Well, you was talking about how a kid doesn't wipe.
No, but I was saying that Bob Costas doesn't wipe. And
how can you say something like that? That is so childish.
Excuse me, does he have pink eye?
Hold on, Sandler, you just went... you sounded like something out of a Hanna-Barbera cartoon. Did you hear that, Phil? He goes,
Yeah, okay. Woo.
Thank you very much, General.
Boy, everybody's looking at me like I just walked out of some kind of a toxic waste accident. Forget it.
Wow, I hadn't thought about it, but did you ever see RoboCop 2?
All right, so we have a situation where Bob Costas has pink eye. What about it? You were here to talk about the giraffe.
Well, forget it then, would it?
See, I told you were going to pee. You talk about PO'd.
Why did he hang up? Why did he hang up?
Well, I think you were a little rough on him. I don't know.
I wasn't rough on him. He's talking about Bob Costas with the pink eye. That guy, that Sadler, I'm getting tired of him, you know. He sounds like Elmer Fudd. He's a doctor. No, he isn't. Yes, he is. I don't know whether he's a veterinarian. I don't know whether he's an internist. I don't know whether he's a, you know.
Well, I don't, you know, talk about it. What's that? What country's that? You're talking about internist. That's not internist, man. It's not a country. But that's the kind of doctor.
Yeah, that's the kind of doctor.
Yeah, as I say, what difference does it make where he's from?
He's from America, right?
I assume he's from America with the accent. I can't be sure.
That's an American accent. It's the Elmer Fudd American. I don't know what that is.
That accent is an East Coast accent that has an Elmer Fudd affect to it, I guess.
Well, what part of the country is that? It's an Eastern. Isn't it New York?
Well, I wouldn't want to associate it with New York.
Why not?
Because it's Elmer Fudd.
Well, what do you mean you wouldn't want to associate it with New York? Who cares where he's from?
Got him on the phone. He just called what? No, you hung up. Yeah.
Give me the phone, will you? Dr. Sadler, sir, you hung up on me.
No, I come from Vista, California.
All right, now, Doc, what I see, he hung up.
Right, he said he's going to hang up.
He's from Vista, California.
Yes, that's right down in San Diego County.
Okay, I mean...
What's weird about that?
He has a very distinctly Eastern... it sounds... And I'm not talking about the Elmer Fudd aspect. The Elmer Fudd thing is the result of him trying to French kiss a cheetah in a lion... a cheetah taming accident. I don't know what it was.
It's a lion taming accident that a cheetah did.
Well, then it wasn't a lion-taming accident. Are you guys for real?
He said that it was a lion-taming accident, and he was trying to French kiss a cheetah as part of the performance. Now, there might have been a lion, there might not have been a lion. Or maybe he was lying.
Yeah, and you tell me to go get a vanilla wafer and cottage cheese.
All right, thank you very much. No, I didn't say that. You're the guy that's always going off to get it.
Well, I can see it in your eyes.
Speaking of eyes, has anyone found out about the giraffe?
We'll find out about the giraffe when I'm good and ready, okay?
What a D word.
That's right, that's me, Phil Henry, the D word. Another blow, if you'll pardon the expression, Margaret, from Winter that packed a punch.
May I see that?
No.
May I see that? Another blow from one of the best. That's filthy.
Well, you know what? The weatherman can't please us all. You know, you're going to have to just relax on some of these headlines.
Yeah, what do you expect them to say?
I don't like the phrase, another blow.
Well, Margaret, we're getting more liberal these days.
No, you can't do nothing about it.
Oh, I can't do anything about it, huh? Phil doesn't have to read that.
I think you got a problem if you don't like that.
No, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with the way it's used on this program.
Yeah, I ain't say nothing yet.
If you say anything, Bud, if you say anything about that headline, another blow from Winter that has packed a punch, if you even smile when I say that, I'm going to take you and I'm going to throw you out into traffic just before I see a nice big truck come down the street. Do you understand? No, do you understand? Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Another blow.
Yeah, I'm looking at him too, Mr. Henry.
Uh-huh. from winter that has packed a punch. So they're waiting for another storm back east, and I'm not sure what that will entail as yet another fierce storm wallops much of the nation, creating havoc from Texas through Maine with ice, freezing rain, snow. Americans are growing weary of a winter that keeps spreading misery, even to places unaccustomed to frigid conditions. Well, suck it up. Oh, sorry, I said suck.
He just laughed.
I know, but I drew attention to it. The latest storm, termed mind-boggling, if not historical, by the National Weather Service, was bringing dangerous ice and freezing rain to heavily populated corridor of the south from Atlanta to Raleigh, North Carolina, before moving north with as much as a foot of snow from Virginia to New England. Though it's not quite the middle of February, the winter's toll has already delivered more than a season's worth of hard punches. More than 3 dozen people from Missouri to Connecticut have died as a result of this wild weather, and tens of thousands of canceled flights stranded travelers sometimes for days. Now, just a point, you know, every kind of weather is going to be, you know, sooner or later, there's record-breaking weather. There's always a record to break with weather, and so that doesn't really blow me away. But here's the thing that bugs me about this weather. You know, we can't have anything happen in this country anymore without some fist fight breaking out. Oh, God, look at the weather. Yeah, well, now here come the climate change versus the no climate change guys, you know. Look at the weather. We can't do a thing around here without, and I'm not saying it's necessarily bad. I mean, there are some fights that we should have. There are some battles that we should join. But weather? Weather? Now, I happen to be a guy that, you know, believes that there is a thing called climate change. I happen to be a guy that believes in that science. I'm not going to get crazy, but I don't deny what I see right there smack dab in front of my face. Nor do I deny it. That's just me, okay? Call me crazy, call me nuts, hate me if you want. But what is the problem here? If it's happening, then you got to open your eyes to it and say it's happening. Now, one of the things that we don't want to do here is spend too much money. We figure it's going to cost us a lot of bread if we have to retrofit this or get new light bulbs here or do this or, you know, don't drink our tea. I saw a whole bunch of people panicking about stuff. But all I ever heard them talking about was don't boil your tea for too long. Get these other kind of light bulbs. Make sure you don't leave so much of a carbon footprint. Just a lot of lightweight crap, you know.
Well, I think it was to open people's eyes to the urgency.
Well, see, that was the part of it that bothered me a little bit because, you know, while I do believe there is climate change, I also kind of get a little upset when I see America and other countries jumping in and say, okay, let's do something about it. And the Chinese and the Indians are saying, you don't mind if we just go ahead and fart some more carbon into the air. Now, do you?
That's exactly what's going on, Mr. Harry. Good point.
What are the Chinese doing?
I'm just telling you that there's some countries that are developing countries, which I understand. And they want a piece of the big pie, man. They're finally getting their countries on their feet. They're finally getting a little bit of a middle class going. They're finally getting a little bit of a this and a little bit of a that, you know? That it isn't just America that has all of the good times. So the Chinese and the Indians are among those nations. And while the world looks at them, the developed nations, and say, well, we have this new problem. It's called global climate change, and it's going to necessitate some action on your part, as well as other countries that are industrialized, to mitigate this. And the Chinese and the Indians basically look back at us and say, no, you that's your problem. You guys were, it was your party for decade after decade. Now we're going to have ours, and you guys go ahead and wring your hands over that crap because we couldn't be bothered. I mean, on the one hand, I sort of get where they're coming from. You know, they want to keep the progress going. On the other hand, God, man, you know.
Well, I think they think that we are conning them into slowing down their progress, and we're conning them with some bullcrap climate change argument. Now, I agree with you, Phil, that it does exist, but I'm also very wary of going and telling the Chinese, the long-suffering and revolutionary people of China, that this does exist. Yes, it does exist, but to them, it doesn't exist. It's counter-revolutionary. And you need to understand, Phil, have you read any of the dialectic... have you read Das Kapital? Do you know...
Hold on, Margaret, before you know...
Margaret, watch it. If you're going to start spouting some of that bull, you're going to start spouting some of that bull dropping. You're going to have me to deal with.
General, please.
No, I... You're going to start spouting some of the bull droppings. I will have none of it.
Hold on. Hold on, General. Now, Margaret, Oh, we have to break. Then we'll be back to our discussion. Now, here's where communism comes in, folks. And even though it isn't communism.
Well, no, it isn't, but yes, it is.
That was clear. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And tune in for all of you all that want to tune in, you know. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and tune in. And I was just talking to my good close personal friend, Nikki, here about the passing of Shirley Temple, which we will get to in just a moment. But first this. I'd like to talk to you about our website, philhenryshow.com, as well as TuneIn, as well as our daily podcasts. All of this can be accessed through our website, philhenryshow.com. This is the digital, this is the internet home of our show. And I talk to a lot of people every day, and they say, Phil, where can I find you on the net? Phil, where can I find you on the radio? Phil. Well, all you have to do is go to our site. You'll see a list of affiliates. But also, you will have an opportunity to listen to our show live right there. You can listen to our show live via our own channel, the Phil Henry Channel on TuneIn. And you can listen to our daily podcasts. And we're going to begin on Monday doing a digest of our daily show, Monday through Friday. That will be a free podcast. And then it will become a premium podcast after that. And then we will have a new digital offering of our radio show coming very, very soon. So I suggest that you get a backstage pass and listen to the Phil Henry Show. It is $9.99 for a full access pass, or only $4.99 for audio only. Well worth it, and really, it is, for all intents and purposes, the future. Thank you.
Oh, I like this. Is very exotic.
Yes, it is. Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com. Yeah, Margaret Shirley Temple, huh?
Yes, Shirley Temple passed on 85 years of age, and I think we can all take a lesson from her. I thought she was lovely, and she was so gracious in her life as a diplomat for the United States of America. She was a representative of our country. I thought she was a lovely woman all the way through life, and I think that she escaped a lot of the hardships that many of our young actors and actresses do encounter trying to transition from childhood into adulthood.
You know, I'd like to read anything I can get my hands on. Now I think I'm going to read up on Shirley Temple in terms of her ability to transition, because, I mean, what you just said, I have no reason to doubt, but I wonder if it was easy, whether it was tough.
Wait, what are you talking about transition?
When she was a child star, she was huge. Somebody even mentioned to me today that Shirley Temple's movies saved MGM. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But her movies made a lot of bread. People went to see them. They were family fare. Kids loved them. Parents loved them for the obvious reason that kids loved them. She was everywhere, man. If you want to talk about who the it girl of the 30s was, it was Shirley Temple. It wasn't, you know, whoever, Thelma Todd. I don't know who the hell they call the it girl, or, you know, what's the... Who was it?
Well, there was Claudette Colbert. There was...
Okay.
There was Jean Harlow. Let's not forget Jean Harlow.
Yeah, all right.
Will you shut up, bud?
He's trying to hurry me along, but I can't be hurried along because I know all of them.
Go ahead.
There was Jean Harlow. There was Claudette Colbert.
Go. Go.
There was...
Go.
Shut up!
There was, I forget...
There were a lot of them, but Shirley Temple was the one, man. And Shirley Temple with the little curly hair and the dancing and all that stuff.
I didn't appreciate the Bojangles. I didn't appreciate it. And I don't think that Shirley appreciated it even as a child, you know?
Which Bojangle?
That is a black guy that tap dance. And he's doing all that tap dance with Shirley Temple. Yeah, I resent that a lot.
Well, what do you mean you don't like Bojangles?
I just didn't like the whole image of the, oh, here he is, the servant.
Well, I don't know what character he was playing in that film.
I think he was playing a butler or a stable, some guy that mopped out the stables and also, oh, yeah, danced.
Sure.
What are you laughing at, Mr. Henry?
Take it easy, will you, Robert, huh? You know, it's no comment on anything other than the image of the guy that slops out the stables and, oh, yeah, he dances. Look, there's no question at all that black actors in the old days of movie making had to find jobs. Basically, there was a a black studio system, if you want to call it that. There were black studios. There were African-American-owned studios and African-American-produced films because the white mainstream studios were simply not open to serious material or good material, quality material for black actors. And so there they were doing all those jackass roles. Butterfly McQueen, you know, Hattie McDaniel. Hattie McDaniel, I just saw a thing on TV of her accepting the Academy Award for Gone with the Wind. Very gracious woman, very well-spoken.
Yeah, she didn't talk like a maid or nothing?
No, she didn't.
That was the character, you jackball.
Well,
no, bud. What, did you think she was a real-life maid and they just went ahead and threw her in the part? That's called an actor, okay? That's what they do. They act. So then comes Shirley Temple and Mr. Bojangles. I don't know, you know.
Well, let me tell you people something, right? Bill Bojangles, which I believe that was his name.
Bill Bojangles.
That's what I believe his name was, yes. You can say whatever you want about whether or not he should have been in this, but he was one holy hell of a dancer, and he would have made Michael Jackson break down and weep. That's how good he was. Michael Jackson would have taken one look at Bojangles and hung his slippers up.
Yeah. All right.
No, what do you mean, yeah?
Phil, that's the big statement that you're making there, General.
Well, I make it and I stand by it.
So one look at Bojangles, Michael Jackson would have hung up his slippers.
You got it, brother. Roger that.
Well, I don't know about that.
You don't even know what we're talking about. We'll be back on a world-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com with more of this discussion on Shirley Temple.
Shirley Temple.
She was a great, great woman. World-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and tune in. Stick around. We'll be back with more to discuss here. Some NAACP confrontation on Fox News and some weather heading your way. Girl, we couldn't get much. World-famous Phil Henry Show, philhenryshow.com, and tune in, and wherever else and however else you can pull this here show in.
Get Chris Norton on the phone.
All right, we'll get to Chris Norton in a moment. Chris Norton calling in. Chris Norton, an adult filmmaker. When we first met Chris, he was a pharmaceutical salesman. He was a pharmaceutical telemarketer, right?
Yes, he was selling on the phone.
Right, and...
That's what a telemarketer is?
Yes, a telemarketer is a guy that, you know, they used to call them bucket shop guys. That's probably not very respectful because they are guys that are selling and working as hard as they can.
Well, what meant by bucket shop?
Well, it's not the most high-class sales job, is it?
I'm not about to put down what a man or a woman does for a living, okay? I mean, if they're, you know, I would say that the people that work those jobs, telemarketing jobs, have a particularly difficult job to do because they get a lot of abuse. You know?
Well, you know, and I'll tell you one place they get the abuse is from my home, because if they call me and I'm about to sit down as I was the other evening, to a pork chop dinner, which my wife, she knows I lie, was my birthday, and I didn't make a big thing out of it.
Oh, your birthday the other evening?
Yes, it was.
I'm not going to ask you how old you are. Why didn't we do something on the show?
Well, I asked. I knew, Phil. He didn't want to do anything.
I don't want to make a big thing out of my... I don't want to have people sitting around going, happy birthday, dee-dee-dee. The whole thing has the effect of a big, stupid, silly gathering of semi-literates, you know, and imbeciles.
Yeah, Joe, so what? That's what makes it fun.
That's what makes it fun. Did you hear what he just said?
Yeah, I understand. All right, so your wife made you pork chops, huh?
Oh, yeah, for my birthday. And I love the pork chop dinner that she makes. She makes it with a rice and does an aru. I don't know, you know aru? You know what that is?
Battle Island?
I'm sorry, is it what?
No, it's not an island. He asked, is it an island?
Is it an island? No, aru is a... aru is a Cajun sauce.
I was going to say, it's made in a frying pan?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, and if you butcher it, if you don't cook it just right and you burn just a little bit, you've got to take everything and throw it into the garbage. And I mean throw it directly into the garbage. And it took me, when we got married, Patsy, and I said to her...
Now, we have to move along a little bit here, General.
Okay, well, hold on. I said to her, now, Aru is very important. And I said, I couldn't break her of the habit of throwing it out. I said, just throw everything out. I even threw out the stove. Never mind, but...
Just because she messed it up, huh?
Because she messed it up?
Yeah, because you can't keep cooking a roux if you burn it a little bit. You've got to throw it into the garbage. And I said, throw it out, throw the pans out, throw the kitchen out if you have to, but throw it out. And that's what happened. I mean, excuse me, that's what happened.
All right, so...
But the point I'm making is I sat down to a pork chop dinner, and when I sit down to a pork chop dinner, you'd better stay clear, far, get away from me. Because all I'm thinking about is the pork chop dinner.
I understand. So what happened?
Did someone call?
Yes, some guy. Oh, hi. Am I interrupting you? Yes. Well, I was wondering if you'd be interested in taking Pulse. It was called Pulse Smoke Weekly. I don't know.
What are you laughing at?
See, he thinks it's funny.
Is that a pornographic magazine?
Yes, it is.
Pole Smoke Weekly. Oh, God.
Yeah, and I'm sitting down to a pork chop meal for the first time in years. And I got this joker on the phone asking me if I want a six-month or a year.
God, it pissed me off.
Well, I do want to announce a very special treat for you guys. Coming up this Friday night, Skippy and Frank will be hosting the final hour of the world-famous Phil Henry Show. Skippy and Frank return to our show, and they will be hosting the final hour of our program. And it's been a long time since we've had Skippy and Frank on, and they are all ready to go.
Where are they working now?
They're working in Frederick, Maryland, at a small station. They were fired from their last gig in Baltimore, I think. I don't know where they were. They were in Baltimore.
Weren't they in the Lettuce Belt?
Yeah, they were broadcasting from the Lettuce Belt.
What is the Lettuce Belt?
Yeah, where is that?
I don't know. They said it's in the Lettuce Belt.
What's the Lettuce Belt? I don't understand that.
Well, three guesses. I guess they grow the lettuce there. God, man. You know, I can't figure that one out, huh?
I know they grow lettuce there. I'm asking you where it is, man. What state? What country, you know?
Well, there's someplace in the Midwest.
Thank you. That narrows it down. Someplace in the Midwest.
Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. Skippy and Frank get canned from every job. So anyway, Friday night at 9, I think it's, God, you know, that'll be wild, man. Skippy and Frank on a world-famous Phil Henry Show hosting for an hour, and we'll see how that goes. We do have Chris Norton on the line from Hermosa Beach, California. He's going to be talking with us here about Bob Costas and, you know, everything that has been happening over the last 24, 48 hours. Bob Costas' run, Chris, of 26 solid years hosting Olympic coverage was finally broken.
That is correct, Mr. Henry. As far as I can tell, Bob Costas has broken his record for hosting the Olympics with a malady called pink eye. And pink eye is something that we're familiar with in the adult film business because pink eye can happen as a result of the transmission of bacteria and bodily fluid. We do try in adult film because we are involved in CESS and film in the CESS scene. Try and...
Can I interrupt for a moment?
Yes.
Did you say sex, sir?
Is that for me?
Yeah, it's sex. You're saying sex, right?
Yes, I'm saying sex, yeah.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, my name is General Shaw.
Yes, sir.
And I've not been familiar.
Okay, yeah, my name's Chris Norton, and I do produce adult film.
Okay, I understand that.
All right.
So anyway, the Bob Costas, okay, he... apparently, what happened to Costas is that he got pink eye, and the eye was flamed out and large and red. And I had said to a friend of mine, I said, that's pretty nasty. And my friend said, yeah, it is. And I got on the phone and talked to some other people, and we pretty much decided it was nasty. And so I did attempt to maybe, you know, call NBC and say that you need to pull him off the air because that does send a wrong message.
Chris Norton is our guest here on the world-famous Phil Envy Show. I failed to mention that at least Chris is claiming one of the reasons why NBC did pull Bob Costas off the air is because he called and recommended they get him off the air immediately because the pink eye sent the wrong message. Now, I want you to be very delicate here, Mr. Norton. I do know that you're in the production of adult films, and I'm going to take a break, and I want you to think this over, but you're going to tell my audience why you felt Bob Costas needed to be taken off the air, not just because the pink eye was very evident, but for other reasons.
Yes, sir, and the reason...
Hold on. Don't tell us now. Wait till after the break.
Now, this guy, Norton, all right...
Just hold, General, trust me, he's a guest. I know you don't know him.
He does need to be very delicate, but you need to get on the phone now and tell Mr. Norton to be very delicate as to what it is he's about to say about Bob Costas.
Oh, he's talking about Bob Costas. I heard him say Costas.
Yeah, Mr. Norton has a sinus condition. I'll get into it. The world-famous Phil Envy Show and philenvyshow.com. All right, so... When we get back here on the show, we'll be talking to Chris about why he made the call to NBC and recommended that they pull Bob Costas off the air, not just because the pink eye looked bad on the screen, but because it, quote, sent the wrong message. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Envy Show.
Bell Bottom News.
Hello and welcome back. World famous Phil Envy Show and philenvyshow.com. And we are here at the El Pacifico. I was just showing people on our video cast, on our PhilCast, the medical marijuana that I have in my possession to help me sleep. Now, as you know, in the state of California, you need a license and a prescription from a doctor to obtain medical marijuana. I have sleep issues. I have insomnia. Now, I haven't tried it, but not yet anyway, but I'm going to. And that's, you know, you can, in the state of California, as I said, you can get these prescriptions, you get licensed, you can have small amounts of weed to enable you to, I don't know, whatever your problem is. Some people have, some women have prescriptions for medical marijuana because they have extreme pain when it comes to their monthly cycles. Some women and men have migraines. It seems to help. There's all kinds of pain issues, I know that. There's all kinds of issues related to cancer. There's issues related to glaucoma. And then there's other issues like chronic insomnia. So I got a hold of a small amount, and we'll see, you know.
So you're going to smoke that?
Yes. What do you think I'm going to do? I got to, you know.
Well, I'm just asking, Phil.
And what about, do you have, like, large amounts of it?
No, I just showed everybody on camera one what I had. I set a small butt of that stuff. And besides, I keep all kinds of weapons here. I've got a 10-gauge shotgun, a 12-gauge shotgun, and I'm not really married to the doors or the windows around here. So if I see anybody coming through any of those things, and it's after hours, and I don't know you, then I go ahead and just chalk up the fact that I'm going to have to put in a new door or new windows.
And you go ahead and blast away.
Exactly. All right.
So that's very comforting.
Well, then don't go crawling through a window around here at night or breaking in through a door, and you'll be just fine.
Yeah.
Well, all right. So anyway, Chris Norton is with us here, and we're talking to Chris about the... what is this? Hold on for a minute, guys. Yeah?
Oh, my God, you guys.
Who is it? Hello? Who is it?
Jamie.
I'm on the air, man. All right. It's the world-famous Phil Envy Show. Phil Envy Show, I'm sorry. That really hacks me off, you know.
Who was that?
Never mind. It really hacks me off when somebody calls me and I'm on the air. All right. So we have Chris Norton on the line with us. Chris, are you there?
Yeah, Mr. Ferry, just so you know, I feel pain.
You need to get closer to the phone?
I'm sorry. I feel your pain, Mr. Ferry, and, you know, maybe what you ought to do is just put it on decline or something like that.
I just did. Chris, we were talking about Bob Costas and the fact that you had made the call to NBC to get him off the air. Are you sure you're the guy that instigated the whole idea to get Bob Costas off the air?
Well, I'm going to have to, I had to plead a Fifth Amendment on that. I'm not really sure whether it was me or whether it was some other executive at NBC. I know they probably have programming executives that will make those decisions. But I'm just coming from my, I'm just coming from my standpoint, of being in the adult film business, and that's all I know, as of being in the adult film business,
Okay, and being in the adult film business, what?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about being in adult film business. The guy comes on with pink eye, pretty much is going to, make a statement, and I don't think it's a good statement. So that's why I said, if a guy come on with pink eye, my feeling was that you need to at least inform people that is in charge of him or... And so that's why we talked to this man at NBC. I said, do you know who's in charge of the Bob Costas? And the guy forwarded us to another guy and then forwarded us to another guy.
Chris, this is Margaret Gray.
Yes, ma'am.
You say that you saw Bob Costas on the air with the pink eye and you called NBC. Now, you knew that NBC was aware of the problem. Bob Costas was aware of the problem.
Yes, ma'am. I knew that Bob Costas was aware of the problem, but I didn't know if NBC was aware of the message that it was sending to the millions and millions and millions and billions and billions and billions and millions of people all over the world.
What message was that?
Well, I mean, you asked me during a commercial break to be try to be very delicate and explain the best way I knew how, and that's all I'm going to try and do.
Yeah, explain to us why it's very delicate first, and then tell us what the pink eye that Bob Costas has represents. They got him off the air because it was a very, dare I say, unsightly thing. It didn't look good, and it was probably giving him no end of trouble. It was probably very uncomfortable to be working with that condition.
Well, that may well be, but then you have to put into consideration the... the audience, I'm trying to be delicate. The pink eye that I said to NBC that Costas might have got it from, and again, I'm sorry to have to be to say it, but I, and if I don't say it good, please excuse me, but from butt sex,
Say that again, from what?
We're worried that he got it from butt sex.
You said from butt sex?
That was it, yeah.
All right, see, that I knew.
I don't want any tittering or laughing. Or are you talking about anal sex?
Yes, sir, that anal sex and the possibility. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit nervous.
That's all right.
Because the dirtiness of it, and that's the only thing that I was able to connect it to. When I first saw the pink eye, I said to Rich Swang, who's one of our co-stars in a movie that we're shooting right now, which is called Wild and Free in the Hills, Wild and Free in Her Hills, and then we did Wild and Free in Her Hills too. Rick Swang and Chip, all of the guys that were here, all of the male members of the cast, they all said the same thing. He's got pink eye and looks to me like he dipped in Dirty Pete's lake, which is our way of saying, that he has sass. He has sass in a dirty area.
We're talking to Chris Norton.
I'm sorry, Mr. Henry, if I overstep my bounds.
No, it's okay. Hold on. We're talking to Chris Norton, who's an adult film producer. And we're talking to him about Bob Costas and Mr. Costas being off the air from the Olympics due to pink eye. You're claiming that this was something that he got because he was engaged in some kind of, quote, dirty sex.
That is our experience, and that has been our experience any time I've seen anybody had a pink eye. There's only, when you talk about pink eye in the adult film business, you are talking, that's explosive. That's very explosive,
Why is it explosive?
Well, I mean, the term pink eye in the adult film business is relative to a place where you put something, I don't know, I probably shouldn't say it, but It's.
I understand what you're saying.
Are you saying it's a euphemism for something?
What's that, sir?
Are you saying it's a euphemism for something?
I don't know what he said.
He's saying that's another way of saying something else. It's a term for something else?
Yes, sir, that's correct.
All right, Chris Norton with us. We're going to pick this up on the other side, take some phone calls. Whatever, Chris, is my response to everything you're saying. Whatever. Perhaps Mr. Costas got that pink eye that way. Perhaps he got it some other way.
Well, I said NBC, given his celebrity and how, you know, if he goes into a town and he's Bob Costas, and he's walking around the town, and a lot of women are going to see him walking around the village, because in Russia there's mostly just a village. And I would think that the Russian women would seeing him walk about the village, you know.
The Russian women seeing him walk about the village would what? Want to have sex with him?
I would well imagine, yeah. So, and it being in Russia, the pink eye is going to be explosive, no question about it.
Okay, so...
You try to tell me the guy gonna get the pink eye?
Would you shut up, bud?
Oh, my God, he's starting to laugh, General.
Yes, I can see that.
Do you want me to take over, Phil?
No, I do not want you to take over.
I'm just trying to tell you this is an occupational hazard in my business.
I'm sure that it is, and there's no question that the advice you gave to NBC has value. I don't know that I would be making the claim that it was you that...
Well, I mean, if you're going to laugh at everything...
I think that's what he's doing.
Hold on, please. Please stand by, ladies and gentlemen, for the... You know, the conclusion of this interview with Mr. Norton, I can tell you that regardless of how Bob Costas got pink eye, even if he got it in the manner that Mr. Norton is describing, I dare say that I am not convinced that anyone seeing that would automatically think, oh, Bob Costas was walking around a village in Russia and... The Russian women were, you know...
Well, they were... So he's saying the Russian women were basically...
Yeah, they're pointing at it and saying...
We'll be right back. You're listening to the world-famous... No, bud, I don't want you to finish.
I've finished my thought.
I don't want you to finish your thought, okay?
Well, you know what? He's finished. I didn't get to finish my pork chops.
Yeah. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show. The world famous Phil Henry Show and PhilHenryShow.com. Chris Norton joins us from Hermosa Beach, California, this evening as we talk about this Bob Costas situation. And by the way, when you talk about in-studio Olympic hosting, members of my generation, and I say this with the greatest of respect to younger, because I don't want to bore people who are younger with, you know, memories of the old days, you know. But I think there's a relatively few number of people listening, not that many, who never saw Jim McKay. He was the studio host at ABC when ABC was really the place you'd go for the Olympics. ABC had the Olympics every year. Every time the Olympics were on when I was growing up as a young adult. I don't know when they seeded it eventually completely. I guess it was 26 years ago, right?
Yeah, it says right there on the 26 years.
Okay, bud, excuse me.
Well, that would mean 88, would it? Or what? Which one would it be?
92, 26, yeah, 88. 88. So, yeah. That meant ABC through the 84 games, which is the last. But Jim McKay was, not only was he the host of the Olympics, he was the host of Wide World of Sports. He's the guy whose voice you hear, perhaps you've heard, you know, spanning the globe, you know.
Wait, which one's that?
The guy on the beginning, you know.
Yeah, man, the agony of defeat. Is that the guy that does the agony in the feet?
I'm gonna belt you, man, because you do that joke every time.
Let me do it. Please let me do it.
I'm gonna kick your ass.
Ow!
I didn't even touch you.
He does that on purpose, Phil, hoping that the police will bang the door down and have you arrested for child molestation or a homicide charge.
I understand.
What's so funny?
Nothing is funny. Nothing is funny at all, believe me. And I can guarantee you this, Bud, if I ever do get a homicide charge, it really won't be funny for you.
I'll take that under advisement.
Yeah, okay, Senator. Wow.
Where'd you learn a word like that?
I don't know.
All right, so anyway, Chris Norton joining us. Chris, let's get back to this whole situation with Bob Costas and the pink eye. At what time, when you saw the pink eye and Bob Costas was on TV, did you then pick the phone up and call NBC?
First of all, Mr. Ram, may I just say, I do remember Jim McKay, and he was excellent. He was just excellent in every way that he did, you know, all the Olympics and everything like that. So I wanted to just lend my voice to, as a producer, I realize I produce adult films, but still, I like to think that we're all, colleagues.
Well, the word is colleague.
Yes, sir, colleagues, and I think that Jim McKay was excellent. I immediately pick up the phone, and I called Steve Swang, who is one of our adult film actors, and I said, are you checking out the pink eye on Casas? And he said, what channel? And I said, it's on Olympics. And he said, what channel? I said, it's on Olympics. And so he had to look it up because I couldn't tell from where I was. I was sitting in front of the TV, but I wasn't able to. I told him it was on channel, 103. And he goes, that's a different cable system. And I said, well.
Okay, I can understand you guys. Did you finally find the channel?
Oh, yes, sir. I said it was on channel 4, but it was different on his cable system.
I mean, was he able to see what you were seeing?
Well, he was at my house at the time, you know, and...
Wait. He was at your house at the time?
Oh, my God.
Yes. I understand. We were watching, and I said, are you checking that out? He goes, what channel? And I said, Olympics.
He was watching it with you?
Yes, sir, but he wanted to find it on his own TV when he got home.
Before anything could be done, or...
No, he just wanted to check it out, that's all. So he said, well, he got home, he goes, what channel was that on again? And I go, it's on Olympic Channel, and...
All right, you guys have already gone around and around on that. Let's just assume that this guy, what's his name?
I'm sorry, his name is Steve Swang.
Steve Swang, is that the name of another actor that you work with in the Dirty Picture? No, I should say...
I don't work in dirty pictures, okay?
Yeah, okay. Whatever you say there, Ace. Was that the guy's name, Steve Swang?
Yes, sir. Yes, General. Steve Swang. Anyway, I said, do you think I had to call NBC? He said, roger that, you know. And I said, okay. And so I call him up, and I got a hold of somebody in the production department at NBC. I think his name was Bob Kloonman. And I said...
What was this guy's name again?
Bob Kloonman.
Yeah, Bob Kloonman or Bob Clark, Bob Floricio, it was one of them names. And he goes, hello. And I said, hi, is this Bob Kloonman? Excuse me, I'm sorry. I dropped my house. I was sucking on a hot tamale. I dropped it.
Okay.
Well, what'd you do? Put it back in your mouth?
Sir, I work in adult films. That's a question you should never have to ask anybody in adult film, you know.
Okay, that's fine, Chris. So anyway, so you got a hold of Bob Kloonman.
Yes, sir. I dropped it again.
Why don't you take the hot tamale and just throw it out?
Well, I mean, that would go against everything that we believe in.
Phil, this man, Mr. Norton, that's fine. I'm sure it's an axiom in your business that nothing drops out of your mouth that you don't put back in. But to tell everyone that that's a maxim or an axiom or a whatever else you want to call it.
Maxi-pad.
A maxi-pad.
Hey! Ow! That hurt.
I didn't touch him.
I saw that. Stop it, bud.
You're saying that that's an axiom in the adult film business. That's not necessary.
Margaret, let me monitor the interview, if you don't mind.
I'm not trying to scandalize nobody. I'm just saying... I talked to Mr. Kloonman, and I said, Bob Costas, who's on your TV right now with his eye bulging out, and I said, that is generally considered in my business, in adult film business, to to have been the result of, making sense in a dirty way. And Mr. Kluman goes, "Who am I speaking to?" I said, "My name is Chris Norton. I'm with Norton Splodes Entertainment." And at that time, he said, "Didn't I see you at a party in the Holmby Hills?" And I said, "In the Holmby Hills, maybe not in Holmby Hills, which is where you probably went." He goes, "Yeah, I did." And it just clicked, you know, and that was it.
Click, and that was it, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean.
Okay, so, and then Bob Costas is off the air, and you guys think that it was you, and who's this gentleman?
That's Steve Swang.
You and Steve Swang called up Bert Kloonman.
Oh, no, sir, Bob Kloonman.
Bob Kloonman at NBC and told him that Bob Costas, his pink eye, is the result of having had sex in a particularly illicit manner.
Yes, sir. I mean, we said dirty, but...
Okay, in a dirty manner. And Bob Costas is off the air.
Phil, you laughing doesn't make this any more adult.
Well, then why are you pointing it out?
Are you laughing, Mr. Harry? I mean, I got way better things to do with my time.
Don't worry what I'm doing, Chris. And, Margaret, I thank you to just allow me to communicate what's happening here. So the result of your conversation with Mr. Kloonman, you're pretty convinced, is that Bob Costas was pulled off the air. You don't think he's off the air because NBC just said, boy, that pink eye looks really bad, and it's probably giving him a hard time to work with. Let's get him off the air.
I have no doubt, Mr. Henry, that there was probably a lot of people at NBC who said, oh, look at that pink eye. I mean, check it out. You know, his eyeball, and look at how nasty ass that is. You know, that's the first thing I said to Steve Swang. I said, look how nasty ass it is.
That's the first thing you what?
I said the first thing I said to Steve Swang, look at how nasty ass.
The first thing you said to Steve Swang was that it was nasty ass. Am I led to believe that that's your commentary?
Yes, General, it is. I mean, I'm not trying to scandalize nobody. I'm just saying.
Well, thank you very much. I've had about enough of this as I can stand.
Well, I mean, Ms. Gray...
No, Chris, thank you very much. It was very enlightening, and I do appreciate it, and I think that it was good that you called, and that you called NBC. We thank you very much for your joining us tonight. Best of luck in your film career.
Thank you very much, Mr. Henry. I just want everybody to know that Running Wild and Free in Her Hills is coming out this...
Okay, thank you very much.
That name is new movie. I Ran Wild and Free in Her Hills.
It was apparently...
He said the working title was Wild and Free in the Hills, and then they changed it to Her Hills.
Oh, that is so typical of the adult film business. They can't leave well enough alone. They've got a perfectly good title, and then they decide, well, I tell you what, let's make it filthy. Let's filth it up so that even listening to the commercial or looking at it will give you pink eye. Never mind being in the same sweat and stench-induced...
God, Margaret.
I don't like that. I was talked into going to Plato's Retreat once in my life as a young woman. Once was enough.
Oh, my God. Margaret went to Plato's Retreat. Margaret went to Plato's...
I'll kick your ass.
Wait. Margaret, what is Plato's Retreat?
You want to tell them?
Yes, I'll tell them. Plato's Retreat was a place here in the Los Angeles area that... If you laugh, I won't say anything.
Well,
if you laugh, I won't say anything. Plato's Retreat was a free sex, group sex club. I did not partake. I went with Frank because he said he was researching a film or a television project. I was disgusted. I wanted to throw up. I did not partake, but yes, I had to have my clothes off. Frank and I strolled about in towels. And
wait just a second. You and Frank walked about.
Phil, do you know that the credibility of what I'm saying is very seriously damaged when you, the host, go, wait just a second?
Morgan, I don't doubt you. I'm sorry, but I didn't know that. Did you have to take your clothes off?
If you wanted to be on the floor there and walk amidst these disgusting people, yes, you had to have on, you had to strip it and put on a towel.
You're walking around in a towel.
God, please let me hit him.
No. Shut up, bud. No kidding. Well, I remember Plato's Retreat. It was right there on Sunset. You'd drive right by it. It had that garish paint job, you know.
Well, what do you mean, garish paint job?
Well, it was a club. It was on, I remember, if you're heading west, it was on the left-hand side of the street. I don't know what it is today. It looks like a rather low slung building, kind of a one-story, you know, very modern-looking building, and there was all of this Plato-type Greek weird sex art on the front, you know?
Yeah, it had pictures of people nude and everything?
No, well, I think it did. It had some, it's some Roman-Greco kind of a thing. Greco-Roman, I guess, is the term. And it was called Plato's Retreat, and they had whatever it was that Margaret said. All right.
So did you get a lot of pink eye there?
You know, General, excuse me.
Oh, come on, Margaret. I'm only fooling around.
Why don't you guys go have a vanilla wafer together?
Margaret, do you want to have a vanilla wafer?
Excuse me, do you want to have a vanilla wafer?
All right, we're going to be right back on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. General, the General's gone. My understanding is we have a little bit of a treat for the General. Not a treat so much as I think what happened was Nikki has recorded let's just call it a small birthday wish for the General. We'll see if we've got it in the file here. And if we don't, we'll find it. World-famous Phil Henry Show. World-famous Phil Henry Show and philhenryshow.com. And, of course, at TuneIn is the place to be. And as long as you're there, don't forget to find us. We have the Phil Henry channel at TuneIn. You can listen to us live there. But you can also listen to the show live at philhenryshow.com. All you have to do is go to our website. It is free. The live show every night streaming right there. If you'd like the podcast, get a backstage pass to our show. And we have two levels, two tiers. There is the all-access pass, which allows you the audio as well as video. And then we have our single tier, which is our audio content alone. Over 15 years and well over 5,000 hours, close to 10,000 hours of audio content, full shows, along with video cast archives, along with all kinds of specials and features and webisodes and downloads of every nature, there at philhenryshow.com. So we heartily suggest and strongly recommend that you get over there and get yourself a backstage pass today, if not a lot sooner, man. All right. Welcome back to the program here. Now, General Shaw is with us just briefly. I want to talk to the General. General?
Yes?
I have a real birthday treat for you, man. Nikki recorded a little something for you.
You're talking about Nikki there
in D.C., man. Let's listen to Nikki's happy birthday to General Shaw here.
Happy birthday to you.
I gotta call my wife.
Happy birthday to you.
Howdy.
Happy birthday, General Galen Shaw.
Are you listening to this, babe?
Yeah. Happy birthday to you.
Mwah. Oh, yeah. Hey, Pat. Hey, honey, did you hear that? The what? Well, she had pork chops. What's that? I can't understand. Can you talk to her, Phil?
Patsy, hi, it's Phil. Did you hear it? Okay, she hung up.
That was absolutely, and Patsy was listening to it. And Nikki, thank you very much. It gave me
never mind what it gave you, okay?
God.
Yeah, I'd probably know what it gave him.
Hey, take it easy, will you? Take it easy.
Phil, will you get another way of telling us to shut up besides take it easy?
What? Patsy? Oh, you dirty.
What's going on, man?
Well, she had a whole plate full of pork chops, and she says she's just now. What's that? Okay. She threw them in the street.
She threw the pork chops in the street?
Yes. She had cooked me pork chops, and she said, if that woman's singing you that song, let her cook the pork chop. She took the one, she pitched them out into the street. In the street. And I said to her, literally, she said, yes, they're right out in the middle of Cover Drive right now. I said, can you go out and get them?
Why should she go out and get them?
To pick them up off the street. Well.
Let me go out and get them, General?
Well, you're going to drive all the way to my house and pick the pork chops up?
Let me ask you a question. She pissed off at Nikki for singing that song?
She's all jealous. Because she was making the pork chops and rice. Call her back, will you?
Look, man, we can't be mediating problems between you and your wife.
Yeah, hey. Yeah, Patsy? What do you mean you took my pork chops and pitched them out of the middle of Covair Drive? The what? Well, there's wild animals that run loose at night. I said there are wild animals that run loose in the middle of the night. They'll eat them for sure. Coyotes, for God's sake, and whatever the neighborhood cats and the squirrel and so forth. Huh? Who did? Well, you threw my pork chops right out into the street, and that guy came and got them? Thank you and good night.
That you were talking to your wife?
Well, she threw the pork chops into the street, and Rich Cullen, who lives across, came out and got them, and he scooped them up, and now he's sitting on his front porch, eating, just holding onto the bone and eating them.
You know, you got some weird-ass neighborhood there, man. I'm telling you.
Don't look at me.
You got a weird neighborhood. Your wife throws your pork chops into the street because Nikki sang you a happy birthday song.
Well, you can understand that.
Well, if I can understand it and you can understand it, then maybe you should have kept that a little more secret. I played it right on the air.
Yeah, you're the guy that did it.
Don't blame me. So then she throws them out into the street, and the guy across the street comes and gets them, and now he's standing there on his front porch eating them?
That's right, and Pats, she took a couple of pictures, and she just Gmailed them to me.
Of this guy eating your dinner?
Yes. See, that's the kind of hardcore neighborhood I live in.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very, very much for that, Nikki. And let's get Chris Norton. Turn that off, will you? It's freaking me out, all that rock and roll. That ain't no good, man. No good at all for our country, all of that acid head stuff. Hold on. Chris Norton for a few more minutes here. All right, so I think we're about finished with all of your horse dung, Chris. Anything else? Oh, that's right. We did wrap up with him.
Yeah, talk about how to run wild and free in a hill.
Oh, in her hills.
Yeah.
Hello, am I still on the air?
All right. Thank God that's done. So just a reminder for all of you.
You forgot that you'd hung up on him.
I forgot I concluded the interview, yeah. Why was that line still open?
I kept it open. I don't know. I forgot to disconnect it.
Disconnect it now, will you? As yet another fierce storm wallops much of the nation, creating havoc from Texas through Maine with ice, freezing rain, and snow, Americans are growing weary of a winter that keeps spreading misery even to places unaccustomed to frigid conditions. Now, the Deep South is going to be experiencing some of this. They interviewed the mayor of Shreveport, Louisiana. He tweeted out, quote, due to inclement weather, the city of Shreveport will be closed Wednesday. He said that in just 1 hour, Tuesday afternoon, the small Louisiana city had 8 car wrecks, a bus wreck, and an overturned garbage truck. The snow has caused me to miss several shifts at work that I count on to pay the bills, said Alicia Kalzawski of Plantsville, Connecticut, who works the early shift at the Southington Cheshire YMCA, and she babysits. It sucks, man. So you guys be very, very careful. It is February. It is winter. It does get like this in the wintertime, man. What are you going to tell? What are you going to tell me? What are you going to tell your kids? What are you going to tell your offspring? Tell them about the winter of 2013 to 2014. That sounds sexy. World-famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com. We'll be right back with more, our final hour, you know.
The winter of 2013-2014. Yeah, that's...
2013-2014. I don't know. It's not as sexy as, you know, the winter of 78 or something like that, but it's going to have to work, man. All right, we'll be back here with our final hour, Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
What's upsetting you?
Somebody just sent me some photographs, and, yeah, you know, I get, I don't know, I just,
You get what?
I get crazy. There's nothing that'll make you crazier in this world. Nothing in this world at all that will get you crazier. And nothing in this world that will, you want to know, I said this to a friend of mine the other day, and I meant this. Do you want to know what will stop your dreams, from coming true quicker than anything you can possibly imagine? And I mean this, and you're going to think I'm being a curmudgeon, and I'm not. I'm going to give you a piece of advice now, all right?
Well, it must be important because you're undoing your pants like it's Christmas.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, either one. It's because I'm just, you know, it's wearing on my... never mind.
Yeah, please, get riding up the crotch, huh?
None of your business. You know what'll stop your dreams faster than anything in this world? Falling in love. Falling in love.
Oh, Phil, don't be a cynic.
No, I'm not being a cynic. I'm telling you right now, the very thing that some people think they want more than anything in this world, the easiest thing that there is to get more than anything in this world is love. That's right. That's exactly right. It's the easiest. You can fall in love tomorrow, man. You can find somebody and fall in love tomorrow. It ain't that big of a deal. It doesn't take that long. It isn't that tough. We all want it. We all look for it. We all search it out higher, more than anything else, you know? Oh, my God, if we can fall in love. Oh, God, if we just had this, and if we just had the perfect woman or the perfect guy, it wouldn't matter. We could live in a tent. It wouldn't matter. Yeah, uh-huh. Guess what? Yeah, it would. And it's an irony because you can be in love, and certainly the very early stages of love, and you can think you're on a rocket sled, man. You know, you're on the greatest roller coaster ride in the history of the world. But it is also that rocket slide, that roller coaster, that thing, that love that makes you think that all things are possible. It is also the very thing that will stop you from taking that extra chance, from rolling the dice one more time, from going out and trying it one more time. It will stop you from doing that. And the other thing that I think is wrong, now I'm not down on love.
Well, it sounds like it to me. It sounds to me like you have decided that love is the thing that stops everything.
No, that's not what Mr. Henry's saying. You gotta listen to him.
Wait a minute. Now, I'm not down on love, but I'm telling you that it is the... And that's the thing about life, the paradoxical story of life sometimes. You know, as the song said...
I know that's the story of, and that's the glory of love. You remember that? You know that song, Margaret?
Yes, I do. That's the story of, that's the glory, do-do-do.
Yeah, sing everything. Yeah.
Yeah, I do. In fact, now that I know you don't like it, now I will. That's the story of...
Oh, hold on, please, God.
I'm just saying to him, you know, if he wants it, he can have it. You want some, you got it. When I get it, you'll get it.
You're right. So, I'm telling you, man, there will be a day that this right hand connects. It's coming fast.
Yeah.
Oh, it is. It's around the corner. The day will arrive. The right hand will connect. Boom! And then you'll say to yourself as you are dropping backwards, bud, wow, he really meant it. Boo, bang.
That's about how what's going to happen, too.
So what I'm trying to say is the following thing. It is one of the great paradoxes of life. Nonetheless, it is true. And, you know, it's when you fall in love, and let me tell you something, you think that's the goal. You think that, oh, I got married. Look at all the schmucks and all of the people in this world. I'm sorry to have to say this. But look at all the people in this world that fell in love, had a family, got married, this, that. Next thing you know, what happened? The bottom drops out of it. You didn't know who you married. I mean, there are those tragic stories. Yes, there are the good stories. Yes, there are the people that, you know, make it work. But I'm telling you. You know, just like Muriel's Wedding. You see that movie?
Oh, that was that movie was really cute.
Is that the fat girl that,
Well, don't call her a fat girl.
Yes, she was a fat girl.
She was pretty fat, you know. Big fat girl wanted to get married, right?
Yeah, she was an overweight girl. She lived in Australia. It's a great movie. It's in fact, it's the breakout hit for, God, what's the name of the actress? Great actress. I forget her name now. A little redheaded actress. She was in Sixth Sense. She played the mom in Sixth Sense.
Yes, it was Betty Slevin.
Betty Slevin?
I don't know, but I came up with a name.
Somebody look it up on IMDb. Anyway, it was her big breakout role, Muriel's Wedding, and also Rachel Griffiths was in that movie. A lot of really good actors in that movie. And she's a little girl. She's a lady. I said little girl. She's a young woman, and she lives in Australia with her family, with her loser family, and it really is kind of a loser family, with this father who dreams of being an important guy in politics. Very, very specific, terrific movie. The characters are absolutely drawn from real life. You can just tell. And here's Muriel, and she wants to get married. Now, understand, I said she wants to get married. She doesn't care to who. She just was. It's not that she wants to fall in love with that Mr. Wonderful and meet the right guy and have children and get married. No, she just wants to get married. She thinks the actual act of getting married, the sacrament of getting married, the ritual, the rite of marriage, she thinks that that act will somehow propel her into a new state of being, of consciousness, of living, of personhood. She thinks that being married, almost like a magical rite or a mystical rite, will sprinkle some fairy dust on her and she'll become a new woman. And she'll be accepted by people, and she'll be loved by her friends, and she'll be in with the girls that she was never in with at school. There's this whole cadre of the typical social girls. They're all blondes, and they're all cute, and at least in their minds, and they all vacation together. And Muriel, she wants to hang with them, so she goes to the same place that they vacation, and she sits there kind of, you know, two tables away and stares at them and waves, hoping she'll be invited over with them, and she never really is. And finally she is, but then they're really, quote, honest with her. You know some women can be with each other. She says, Muriel, let us just tell you, you know, you're really fat and you're really inappropriate and you laugh too loud and there's a million things that are wrong with you. And if you correct all these problems, then you'll be cool with us. And poor Muriel buys into this until she meets this girl. I think it's a classmate of hers or something. She meets her who's down to earth, real.
And that's the one played by Rachel Griffith. I love that character. And the poor girl gets crippled.
Well, hold on. For God, Margaret, you give the whole thing away?
Well, the movie's been out for like a billion years. How many people do you think not seen it yet?
There's probably a lot of people that haven't seen it. I don't think the movie was all that big. You know, it was not a big box office smasheroo here in America. It was made in Australia. And fantastic movie. But anyway, this friend of hers, they get together, and she finds her real self with this friend. She finds out who she really is, you know? She finds out she's Muriel, and she's just going to be Muriel, and she can't be anything other than that. And she's going to go back to her home where she left her family, and she's going to lay it on the line to her father and all his bull crap, and she's going to lay it on the line to her family, and she's going to come back and take care of her brothers and sisters, because the house is a mess, and her brothers and sisters really need a strong hand, and her mother has just got busted for shoplifting and is on her way into the nut house, and the father's left. The whole thing is real goofy, but you get a sense, and I won't give you the rest of the movie, because that ain't the end of the movie.
You just gave it away.
No, I didn't. That's not the end of the movie.
Oh, it's not.
No, it's not. No, no. Far from it. I really recommend it. It's a great movie. And it's all about how marriage, you know, how some people see these things, these rituals, you know, marriage, love. It doesn't matter to who. It doesn't matter to what. It doesn't matter when. It doesn't matter. It just, if you do this, and you do that, and you do this, and you do that, you're going to be fantastic. And that ain't the way it is, you know.
Well, that movie said about, well, what are you talking about love, though? You're saying that love...
When you are looking for love and you fall in love and you find love and you're in love and you got the love and she's your love and he's your love and everything is love, man. Man, the last thing you want to do is not have it. You don't want to be out of love. You don't want to not have love. And so all the stuff that is going to take you away from her or away from him, all the stuff that's going to make you feel less than that, you don't want to do. And some of that stuff is the dice rolling and the roulette wheel spinning and the chance taking and all of the things that you got to do in this world to make your way to those, you know, up those golden stairs. You do not in this life find success without taking big chances. And if you're not willing to do that, then that's okay. It's, you know, not a problem, but I'm just talking about, you know.
Well, and if you're willing to gamble big, you better be willing to lose big.
You got that right. You got that right, man. That's the part that really gets people. That's the part that'll destroy you if you're not careful. So
what were you all grousing about?
Nothing, just, you know, let's put it this way. I got some pictures that were messaged to me.
That's what she said.
What?
Man, that doesn't even work. What?
Why'd you say that, buddy? That felt like a wet fart.
What? I said that's what she said.
Yeah, it wasn't funny.
It would, not only was it not funny, it wasn't. It didn't. What?
You're not gonna laugh?
No, I ain't laughing. All right, we're gonna be back here on the world famous Phil Henry Show with something far more serious, something far more important, something far just anything but what we've been talking about. World famous Phil Henry Show. Woo! I'm Phil, and this is my music.
Yeah, it's a guy, old guy music.
Yeah, it's old guy music, whatever. Anyway, welcome back to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. And speaking of old guys, Bob Costas and his being off of the coverage, the Olympic coverage, for as long as, for tonight, I guess, or whenever the hell it happened. Chris Norton had been on our show earlier, is saying that his pink eye, that is Bob Costas's pink eye, was the result of Bob Costas engaging in, quote, dirty sex, which he attributed to...
Well, let me say it. I'm the female, and it will sound a little less harsh. Chris Norton said that it was the result of butt sex, so...
And you think that sounds less harsh coming from you, huh?
Are you telling me it doesn't?
I'm saying...
You know what? It's fine. It's fine.
No. No, the two of you aren't going to get away with it. Are you telling me it doesn't?
Phil, you want me to do it or you?
It doesn't matter who says it, Margaret. It sounds a little harsh, yes.
So me saying what I just said sounds as bad as if Bud said it or one of his tittering motorcycle gang member friends or Robert, or the rest of you guys sitting around a sports bar. Sounds the same.
It doesn't sound the same, but there's no way you can you know, smooth it off and say, well, here, that's what Mr. Norton said. I don't think we had to be that graphic.
That's what that clown said on your program, and I tried to mitigate the harshness of it by being a female voice.
Margaret, don't get upset, please.
Well, I don't...
Margaret, you did the very best you could, but the fact is... That Claude, Chris, and let me tell you something. I don't watch adult films because I'd like to think of myself as a higher quality, a higher grade of man than that. But if I did, I will avoid the Norton Splodes imprature because
okay.
So you think I will watch those, huh?
Well, what do you... If you did, you would avoid the Norton Splodes imprature.
Yes, I'm assuming he is produces them himself. It's not Caballero, is it?
But you don't watch adult films.
I know the name Caballero from a bachelor party I went to. Is that all right with you?
General, you're lying. You're lying like the dog you are. And
well, you know something? Have a care. Smile when you say that.
Look, it. We're not in the middle of the Hamilton-Burr duel here, all right?
But
don't worry about it. Just... Everybody back the hell off. Norton Splodes imprature.
Well, whatever you call it.
Anyway, so what the hell am I talking about? Oh, yeah, so Chris Norton was on the program here talking about that, and I did hear from one of my friends high up at the network level, and they said, I can assure you, Phil, this clown that you had on your show did not in any way, shape, or form influence our... decision to take Bob Costas off the air. Bob was removed from the air by his own volition. He felt that he could not, in all good conscience, be on the air with a big, glowing, big, fat red eyeball sticking out at everybody, almost as if he was some kind of a freak out of the circus.
Did he really say that?
No, he didn't. But anyway...
Well, then why would you say...
In any event, he said that... We were thinking that maybe Bob had had his fingers somewhere and then stuck them in his eyeball as he put his sports jacket on very quickly, hearing the police approaching.
Yeah, you're full of it.
Yes, of course I'm kidding. God, you guys you're cracking me up.
What is that?
Nothing. It's a script. I got it.
Let me see that.
You are not allowed to look at that, okay?
Got an audition or anything, Mark, don't you?
Maybe I do. All right. We wanted to get into some other things here tonight. We've been talking about the Olympics. We talked about Bob Costas, and we certainly have talked a little bit about the great career that Jim McKay had, and got a couple of questions on Twitter from people. As I said to Nikki when I mentioned Jim McKay, I said, you know, Jim McKay is a great broadcaster, and so many of you younger people don't know who Jim McKay was, and that's because... Jim McKay retired before a lot of the present generation, and by that I mean people, say, 30 years of age and younger, before a lot of you guys had an opportunity to see him. But he was a terrific, terrific presence on network television, specifically on the sports coverage on ABC. Jim McKay was discovered as a newspaper writer. He was from Baltimore, Maryland. That is where he was plying his trade as a newspaper writer, I guess, for the Baltimore paper. Do you remember, General, the name of the Baltimore?
I want to say it was the Baltimore Sun, but I don't know. But I know that Jim McKay, or the Baltimore Bugle, it was one of those, the Baltimore Bugle or the Baltimore Blurb.
No, it wasn't the Baltimore Blurb. It was the Baltimore Bugle.
No, it was the Baltimore Sun. I did the Baltimore Bugle. What?
Well, what's so funny about that?
There's no Baltimore Bugle. Anyway, we're going to bring on the show to talk, reminisce just a little teeny itsy bit, Don Berman, who will discuss with us the great career that Jim McKay had. And again, as we're looking at this Olympic coverage, Don, we are reminded of Jim McKay and what he meant to the Olympics.
Well, Phil, Jim McKay, I don't think I could pay a higher tribute to Jim McKay than to say what you said earlier in the program. That is his voice on the agony of defeat and the thrill of victory at the beginning of the wide, wide, wonderful, wide world of sports. And the fact that that became, speaking of imprature, General, the fact that that became the signature phrase on the wide, wonderful, wide world of sports, or whatever it was called. I know that we go back and forth on these names.
One of these days, I've got a fond desire that one of these days we get the name of a show right around here. But you're right, Don. It was the wide, wide world of sports.
Well, it's a mouthful, and I say that with all due respect to the argument you had earlier in the week about mouthfuls. I mean, no disrespect to any of the females in the studio tonight, Margaret.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that, because there was a great deal of discussion about that.
No, I know. I think if you're going to use a phrase like, boy, that sure is a mouthful, I don't think you want to look at any female in the room and sort of suppress a laugh.
All right. Well, I don't think that was necessary.
You don't talk about me. I didn't do nothing.
No, not now, but you did earlier in the week.
Yeah, and I just wanted to make that point. On to Jim McKay. Jim McKay, as you said, Phil, was discovered in a newsroom in Baltimore, in I think it was the Baltimore Sun, and he was there as a sports writer. And the Baltimore Sun had just purchased a television station. Now, back in those days, that's what newspapers did. They were the ones that purchased the television license and set up the television. Now, if you look at many of the big broadcast concerns in our country today, WGN was owned at one time by the Chicago Tribune. WTOP in Washington, D.C. was owned by the Washington Post, and so on and so forth. So it was that the station in Baltimore had been purchased by the Baltimore paper, and they needed someone to go on camera, and they literally went into the newsroom and found young Jim McKay sitting there, writing his sports.
What was he doing? Just picking his butt and everything, or what?
Do you want me to talk to him, or am I going to have to...
No, but hold on, Bud. Don's going to tell the story.
Yeah, but I was just asking. Well, it's a legitimate question.
No, it's not a legitimate question. You just heard Don say he was writing his sports, not picking his butt.
Oh, hold on. There's a phone. Yeah? Yeah, what do you want? I'm on the air right now. Oh, baby, you and that espresso. L. Ron Martin's going to come down here.
Boy, you sure are talking freely with him these days.
Well, what do you mean I'm talking freely?
Oh, yeah? What do you want?
Well, I told him. I said, look, L. Ron, I don't care that you own or are the manager or whatever you do around here, but you had better just stay clear of me, because my friend, I am Don Berman, Channel 19 news anchor, and as far as I can tell, you aren't.
Hold on, Don, and we'll be back. Okay, I can already see some kind of a confrontation setting up. We'll see how far along we get with Don Berman as he talks to us from the newsroom tonight about the great career of Jim McKay, the erstwhile anchor on the Olympics. We were just talking about Christmas, so I thought I'd play some Christmas music.
What are you talking about? This Black Sabbath.
This is more like Halloween.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm kidding. Maybe I'm joking.
Oh, that's the famous Phil Hendry sense of humor.
Anyway, welcome. God, welcome back to the show.
Well, Phil, don't roll your eyeballs at me and go, "Gad." Who knows what you're talking about half the time?
Thank you. World famous Phil Hendry Show and PhilHendryShow.com back here with Don Berman on the line. At least General Shaw, you understand.
No, I understand your sense of humor, Phil. You're a kooky cat. You know, as they like to say, you're way out there. And you have a kooky, goofy, kooked out. Isn't that what they say?
Well, they don't say kooked out.
Yeah, well, Phil's kooky, you know.
Yeah, but say it, Phil's far out, you know, way out.
Right, you're what the kids will say, you're sick. Boy, that Phil Hendry's sick, and the kookiness of it, you know.
Yeah, I don't think anybody really relies on the word kooky anymore. I think it's, you know, you're sick, you know, it's crazy, whatever. It's funny, you know.
Yeah, but if you don't mind, I'm just communicating it the way that I feel that a young person should and the way that I would. And you're away kooky, you're kooked out. Now, if you don't like it, that's too bad. That's what I'm saying.
All right, General, you don't have to get aggressive about it.
The guy is a kook. He's way kooky.
Well, now you're saying it like I'm some kind of a guy that would plant a bomb someplace.
No, I'm... Boy, what a weird hat. Did I say anything like that?
Then back off, General.
Shh. What a pain in the...
Hey, you want to get a vanilla wafer?
No, I don't.
You better get some water, because there goes your voice.
My voice or my voice?
Get him some water, will you?
Come on, General, we got to get some water.
The hell with it. And you're too kooky, too.
All right, So, Don Berman, back with us here on the Phil Hendry Show. Don, again, thank you for being with us. We're talking about the great career of Jim McKay. Jim McKay, the longtime anchor on the Olympics and a man who set the standard, I think, for all of the studio reporting, because Bob Costas is off with Pink Eye.
And I'm glad you brought up Bob Costas. Phil, I will be unabashed. And I will say to you that I think Bob Costas is overrated. And I think that Bob Costas would do well to sit at the feet of a Jim McKay, keep his big fat mouth shut, and try to cover up the pink eye and try to keep his fingers out of wherever they've been and learn something. So here he comes. Hold on for a minute. It's Elrond. I'm sorry. Excuse me. How many times are you going to want to get coffee? You asking me a question? I'm sorry.
Is that Elrond Martin?
Three guesses. I'm sorry. I just got to get... Hey, Eddie... Come on, we get this coffee, huh? Oh, Ron, it's later, Berman, okay? Just do your show, Berman. Don't bother me. Don't bother me. Yeah, but I just... Don't bother me.
Oh, you really got that guy under control, don't you?
Don't worry about it, okay? Don't worry about it. We have an understanding.
Yeah.
So, anyway, Bob Costas would do well to keep his fat mouth shut, cover up his pink eye, God, for whatever he does, don't put his fingers all over Jim McKay, and just sit and listen to what Jim McKay could teach him about anchoring sports coverage in the studio. Because, Phil, I think we all remember the 1972 Olympics.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Well, that was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, though, Don.
Well, it might have been once-in-a-lifetime, but I think Jim McKay and really all of the sports reporters that covered the 72 Olympics showed their mettle, not just as sports reporters, but as news reporters. News reporters. And that, Phil, set the standard for the... Oh, you dirty... I'm very, very sorry. Just one moment.
Why don't you move to another place or something?
What?
Why don't you move?
Move? We just bought the house.
I'm talking about where you're on the phone.
Oh. You done? Maybe I am, maybe I'm not. What are you all of a sudden with the questions? Boy, you're a real wise guy.
Get someplace where you're away from that espresso machine before I flip.
Sorry, all right. I'll move over here. Hey, by the way, did you see Sam Rubin? He called Samuel Jackson Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, I saw all about it, yeah.
What a moron. Woo-hoo! Woo! All right, so,
Did you just find out about that?
What's that?
Did you just find out about that?
No, I've known that for 2 days.
Okay. I mean, it's kind of old news now, isn't it?
Oh, no, I haven't heard you talk about it at all.
Well, it was a local thing, but, yeah, there was a local guy here, folks.
I'll do it since I brought it up, if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Phil. Don Berman here. Sam Rubin, who is a local reporter on Channel 5 KTLA, had Samuel Jackson on to do an interview. Well, guess what? He kept calling him Lawrence Fishburne until Samuel Jackson finally flipped his lid on camera and told Rubin that he was basically a blithering idiot and quit calling me Lawrence Fishburne, you jackass. And then he walked off or something. I don't know.
Well, what did he do?
I don't know. I didn't watch it.
Then how do you know what happened?
Because I read about it. I read what I wrote about it.
You read what you wrote about it?
I read the news report, yes.
You wrote the news report?
I wrote the news copy for our 5, 6, 7, 10, and 11 o'clock reports, yes.
Well, if you wrote the news copy, then how do you know what... Why don't you know what happened?
I don't remember what I wrote. If it's all the same to you.
Well, you know something, Don, I don't know how you get away with it, but you do a beautiful job of just... You have bullcrapped your way through... To quote my husband, Frank... All right?
Oh, God, don't give me Frank, okay?
No, to quote my husband, Frank, you've bullcrapped your way through 35 years of a career.
Yeah, and you know what? You know what Frank is blankety-blank through 35 years of? Wouldn't you like to know?
You know, we've been married 35 years.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Hang up on him.
Okay, now wait a...
All right, I'm leaving.
I'm sorry, Margaret. You're the one that started this catfight. She there?
No, she walked out. So I've lost her, I've lost Dickman, I've lost General Shaw. It's you and me, Robert.
That's fine with me.
That's okay, you and Robert. I'll talk to you guys all day and all night. You guys are sensible men. Now, where was I? Ah, yes.
Wait a minute. You're not giving a speech here, okay? So you're talking about Bob Costas and his pink eye. Let's talk about Jim McKay.
I'm talking about Jim McKay. Jim McKay was solid gold. He was the gold standard of sports reporters. When Jim McKay came on television and began to report on a sporting event, you knew he'd done his homework. He knew everything there was to know about that sport. He gave you not only the stats, he gave you not only the facts and the figures, he gave you the background, the color, he gave you the personalities. He was a grade A interviewer, knew how to talk to people, knew how to bring the best out in people. And when I bring up the 1972 Olympics film, I'm bringing up something that was very tragic, and Jim McKay handled it very, very well. Now,
okay, Don, thank you. We, you know, got to keep this moving along a little bit.
I was about to move it along.
All right, but I want to ask you some questions, if you don't mind. First of all, you know, we're talking about the 72 Olympics. It was a very, very tragic, tragic Olympics with the death of those athletes and the terrorists that took them as hostages. And so to clarify for people, it was Jim McKay and all of the sports guys that were working the Olympics for ABC who were suddenly thrust into the role of being news reporters. And that's what was so impressive about the... Oh, are you kidding me?
Hold on for a minute. What the... Hey, how you doing? Do you have to grab the phone out of my hand? I just want to say hi to Mr. Henry. I'm sorry. Here's your phone back.
Yeah, how you doing?
Here's the phone. He said hi. Hey, how you doing, Phil?
I'm doing great.
All right, Greg, just get some coffee. Hey, get the coffee here. Everybody, I got coffee for you.
You know that Don's on the air?
I say it again?
Don's on the air using that phone.
Oh, you're using this phone? I'm sorry. Good thing I ain't got no pink eye. You know I've got my hand up. Thanks a lot. God almighty. Oh, God.
What? What's wrong?
Well, the guy mentions pink eye, and he's had his hand all over this phone. Ah, Jesus.
Well, wipe it down with some Lysol or something, man. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, well, Don, thank you, man. I'm going to let you go so you can wipe the phone down.
That's the first time anyone's ever said that to me. And you know what makes me feel cheap? It really does. I wanted to talk about Jim McKay, and the lockout is let me let you go so you can wipe the phone down. I thought you had a higher opinion of me, Phil. I thought we had a close...
All right, Don Berman, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm back.
Good for you, General. Thank you very much.
Well, I didn't want to be sitting in here, especially with that jackball, what's his name? Because that guy tightens my jaws.
Berman?
Yeah, I heard the things he said about Bob Costas. Now, Jim McKay I love, but when he said that Bob Costas is sitting there like a circus freak with the big red eye, I felt like I wanted to punch him.
Don Berman.
And Bob Costas, yes.
All right. Okay. So,
well, what did you make of that?
What did I make of it? What I made of it was Don Berman going off, blathering again, talking about how he rules the roost over there. And here comes L. Ron Martin with his espresso machine. And Don's just nothing more than a cowering office boy. Okay.
Well, yeah, he doesn't have the power he says he do.
Yeah, that's right, bud. But he is right about Jim McKay and those guys. They turned that the 72 Olympics, which was to be, as all Olympics should be, a celebration of athletic prowess, the world coming together, blah, 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 all that great stuff. And instead, it was a disaster and a nightmare. It was a nightmare and a disaster on a lot of levels. It was a nightmare because the way the Olympics handled that horror of athletes taken hostage, murdered, this gunfight that resulted in the detonation of those explosives, the helicopter coming apart, everything that was the worst possible scenario, and then the Olympics went forward. Now, I understand it because you had to be alive then, and understand the world as it was in those days. The world was trying to get through this muddle of violence that had been erupting. In that part of, at least in the Middle East and other parts of the world as a result of the Middle East, that had been erupting full scale for a few years. Now, the Middle East had been a dangerous place since the end of World War II, but it really started getting hot in the late 60s and early 70s. And the world was trying to push through all this stuff. Didn't quite get it. There was so much going on, from the domestic stuff in the United States, in Europe and elsewhere, to the international stuff, that I think people were saying, you know, we can't let this stuff stop us. Let's just keep pushing forward. So it seemed normal to go forward with the Olympics. It didn't seem like a disrespectful thing. Now, in retrospect, maybe, I don't know.
Well, I don't think it would have mattered one bit whether they would have stopped or gone forward.
But I'll tell you, the American Olympic Committee at that time was particularly insensitive and ignorant and every other possible thing you could think of. We had a prominent Jewish member of the American Olympic team, Mark Spitz, who was breaking swimming records, but also was at risk. If they were killing Jewish athletes, who was to say that Mark Spitz or any other prominent Jewish athlete was safe? So but through it all, there was Jim McKay and the guys that were sent there to be sports reporters, suddenly news reporters, and man, they were good. They were real good. Howard Cosell, I can't remember who the other guys were, but everybody was on top of it pretty well. All right, we're going to be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com to wrap up and to clean up and to wipe up and to wipe our phone down, man. We'll be right back. Famous Phil Hendry Show, philhendryshow.com, online at philhendryshow.com, and tune in. Check us out on TuneIn. And coming soon, the Phil Hendry Show highlights will be featured on iTunes. They will go behind our paywall, if you'll pardon the expression.
Yeah, it sounds kind of dirty.
It ain't dirty. They'll go behind our paywall after 5 days, but we will be giving you highlights from the show on iTunes. So I was just talking about upstate New York.
Yes, I heard Nikki. She got very happy because she's from Birmingham.
Binghamton.
Bing, what is it?
But Bing.
Binghamton is the name of the town. Don't start, you know.
No, I'm not doing anything. I'm asking you. Where is it?
It's in New York State.
Well, what is Binghamton? I thought it was Birmingham.
Binghamton is the name of the town in New York State. Birmingham is...
Well, now, hold on. Birmingham is in England.
I know that, General. I know.
All right. Why are we talking about Birmingham? Binghamton, New York is where she hails from. And I was in Utica, New York for a summer.
You were there as a disc jockey.
Yes, I was working at an oldies but goodies station.
An oldies but... What's that mean?
Well, let me just tell you there, genius. An oldies but goodies station's oldies station.
Yeah, it's like K-Earth. The one that goes K-Earth, you know? That the one that goes K-Earth 101?
Yeah, that's it, bud. What, are you going to be Rain Man now and start singing the jingles?
Damn, that's funny.
Boy, he got you with that one, bud. Really chopped you down.
Yeah, that's not funny.
I think it is.
Rain Man. Well, that's a good nickname for you, bud.
Let's not be cruel now. Come on.
I was just singing a jingle.
Well, good. You sang the jingle, K-Earth 101. Yeah. It's like Oldie Station. That's how I worked at for a summer. And I was there in, I was in Utica, New York. And I was there in the summer of 1975. So, you know, Nikki was born a few years later in Binghamton. But what I remember about upstate New York and the Mohawk Valley there, man, very nice people. I remember things like, you know, the heat in the Adirondack Mountains and driving up to Speculator and places like that.
Now, what is Speculator? That's the town up there?
Yeah, there's a town in the Adirondacks called Speculator. I think it was kind of a summer. And it's also a ski resort. Where I lived in Utica, though, was in the older part, the center part of the city. It was on Genesee was the name of the street, Genesee Street. And I've often told the story that I lived right across the street from a bar called Durante's. In fact, the radio station was also where was across the street from Durante's. And I go into this place and I would drink a beer there. And there was a guy sitting at the end of the bar every single time I was in there who looked like the old actor, song and dance guy, Jimmy Durante. You know, now, you know who it is, General and Margaret. Do you guys know?
Who, the Jimmy Durante, the guy with the big nose?
Jimmy Durante, the guy with the big nose. Yeah, he's that. But anyway, this cat looked just like Jimmy Durante. And he was in this place called Durante's Bar. So I would sometimes think.
Gary gets so drunk, you thought it was him?
I never got so drunk that I thought it was really him. But I got drunk enough to think that I would walk over to him and say, "You look like Jimmy Durante." To which he replied, "Oh, I've never heard that before."
Meaning he had.
Yeah, meaning he had. Yeah, so it was an interesting period. But while I was there, I partied in all of these little clubs around town. Yeah, I mean, it was the 70s, you know, so it was, and it's the 70s in a small city, you know. I couldn't be further away from Hollywood or New York City or any of these other places. So you're just with the youth of Utica. You know,
everybody probably wearing bell-bottom pants and a bad mouth in the country, man. Listen to punk rock.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you very much, Lou Gossett Jr.
Lou Gossett Jr. That's what he said in that movie, though.
I know. He said that in Officer and a Gentleman.
What did he say?
In Officer and a Gentleman?
I love that movie. What did he say in the movie?
He said to the recruits, he said, "You've probably been bad-mouthing your country and listening to punk rock."
Oh, okay. Yeah, he was giving them the reading the riot act, wasn't he?
I'm glad you got that out, General.
You know something? All it takes is just a little squeeze, just a little squeeze.
What does that mean?
That's from the border, and he means trigger.
I'm kidding.
I beg your pardon. Trigger?
Yeah, like the horse.
Will you?
Hey, what are you gonna do? Hit the old man?
No, I was getting up, Phil, to go get a drink of water.
Oh, sorry. Upstate New York. So anyway, I was in a club one night listening to all of the 70s songs, and one of them was this Rufus, Tell Me Something Good. And the band that was playing, there was a band up there, they were playing this song, and speaking of somebody that looked just like someone, I thought I saw Chaka Khan on the stage. And believe me, I wasn't doing hallucinogenics, I wasn't doing any kind of psychedelics at all, and I don't think I was psychotic, but there she was. So I often have wondered from time to time, you know, if I actually saw. I know I didn't see Jimmy Durante.
But you think maybe you saw this young lady, Chaka Khan, huh?
Chaka Khan, yeah. But I doubt it, seriously.
I don't think Rufus would have been playing some downtown Utica, New York club. I could be wrong, but I doubt it.
No, you're right. It's, all right.
You probably hoped that it was Rufus.
Yeah, I kind of did, you know. But that's like the time I had a birthday party, my 50th birthday party. I hired a band, a really good band called Moving Targets. These guys did blues, but they had a part of their act where they dressed up like ZZ Top. Okay, they put on long beards, and they had the spinning guitars, and it was great, and they did all the ZZ Top music. Well, some guy shows up to the party late, and these guys are now into the ZZ Top part of the act, and this guy, this friend of mine, thought that I'd hired ZZ Top.
Oh, for God's sake.
I mean, it's not too respectful of ZZ Top, is it?
I wouldn't think so. You know how far you have to fall to be playing your driveway? I don't think so.
Yeah, well, to be playing my driveway.
That's what it was.
Yeah, that was my driveway, all right. Okay, folks, well, that's the end of that, and there can't be, all the wreckage is, just forget it. Don't forget to check out our podcast tomorrow on The World of Phil Hendry on the Sideshow Network. And, of course, you can listen to a podcast of this show here on our website tomorrow as well with a backstage pass. World-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com. We really appreciate Nikki McKee and all of the assistance she's been giving our radio show. Alex Cohen, who's our operations guy as well. I'd like to thank Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard and Margaret Gray and General Galen Shaw. And, of course, I want to thank me, Phil Hendry. Thanks, Phil. You're welcome.
What an ego.
Yep.